This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's new movies I'm going to be talking about are The Fate of the Furious, Gifted, Spark, A Space Tale, Tommy's Honor, spelled with a U, and Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the home cinema roundup with a spotlight on Sing. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And finally, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first thing I want to mention is a rest in peace. We had another celebrity death this week, and that was Charlie Murphy, the older brother of Eddie Murphy, who had come into his own on Chappelle's show, Dave Chappelle's Comedy Central series, where he kind of got his comedy career kickstarted a little bit more. He always kind of lived in his brother's shadow, but that kind of really put him a little bit more independently on the map. He had leukemia and he died of complications at age 57, which is, that's really young. And that's sad. You know, anytime somebody dies, it's sad. So he will be missed. One little bit on Don Rickles. I actually had a listener get in touch with me and say, hey, you didn't talk about any of the movies the guy was in. And I'm like, yeah, because I was talking about the insult comedy and everything. But yeah, Don Rickles, a lot of people know him from the movies. I know him mostly from television shows and guest spots. And I mean, he was a huge character actor in the 70s and 80s on television. He'd show up all the time, either as himself or as basically a version of himself. But he also had some pretty big roles. I mean, he's most recognized for Mr. Potato Head in Toy Story, and apparently he didn't do the recording for Toy Story 4 before he died, so they're going to have to recast that. And this is the second of the notable toys that we've lost, because of course Jim Varney died a while back. So in Toy Story 3, it was voiced by another person. But Don Rickles did some more serious work with stuff like Run Silent, Run Deep, and Kelly's Heroes. But he also did a bunch of Beach Blanket movies back in the 60s, like Beach Blanket Bingo. And even in the 90s, he did movies like Innocent Blood and Casino, which played a little bit more off of his persona. But like I said, I remember him from all the character actor guest stars on TV shows and series that were on in the 60s and 70s, mostly that he either saw, you know, in the 70s on the air broadcast or in syndication reruns. So, yeah, Don Rickles, he definitely had a footprint in the movies. One other piece of news I wanted to hit, and it's not going to be a Star Wars news. I'm not going to cover Star Wars. I'm not covering Star Wars this week because Celebration's happening throughout the weekend, and we'll get all of that put together, and then I can sift through the most salient stories, and we'll talk about those next week. Although I did get a press release about a Star Wars article in the AARP magazine. And I'm like, I read it, and I'm like, that nonsense. Retired people? And then I realized Star Wars is 40 years old, and I did the math, and it works out, sadly. I mean, I was really young. I was like 5 when the first one came out. But if you're in your 20s when Star Wars came out, yeah, you're retirement age. You're AARP prime cut real estate. One little piece of news that came out this week I found interesting is Josh Brolin has been cast as Cable in Deadpool 2. Now, I never read the Marvel comics, so I'm not familiar with Cable as a character. I've heard of him. So he's on my radar. I mean, I remember seeing pictures of him and stuff like that in the comic book shop when I would go in there when I was younger. But I don't know much about the characters, but a lot of people kind of went a little bonkers on this because like, wait, he can't play. He's playing Cable, but he's also Thanos in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And look, people, first of all, you got to realize just because it says Marvel does not mean that it's the same studio. And this has been an issue for a while, and I don't know why people still don't get it. Fox has the Fantastic Four and the X-Men. Marvel Cinematic Universe has everybody else. And then Sony has its hands still on Spider-Man, and they may try and kind of wrestle a little bit of it out there. But this is what happens when it's not an entire studio owning everything from the beginning. They sold off all these properties earlier. Look, there's a lot of people who've played two superheroes. Ryan Reynolds played Green Lantern and Deadpool. Yeah, they're two from two different series. But you also had Ben Affleck play Daredevil, and he played Batman. And you've got Halle Berry, who played Catwoman and Storm. And, I mean, there's a whole list of actors that have played more than once. And even like, oh, well, okay, here's my question then. Why is no one freaking out? Because Chris Evans was Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four movies, and he's also Captain America, now trying to kind of shrug that off. And we'll talk more about that later in the hour. The last piece of news, which I found interesting, I normally don't report on rumors and this person wants this part or, you know, just sort of gossipy kind of things, but I found this interesting is there was a story that came out that said Dwayne Johnson, you know, The Rock, had auditioned for the Jack Reacher role, which eventually went to Tom Cruise. And I understand Tom Cruise is a big action star and he's a big name and you just want to get Tom Cruise on the project. But honestly, I go back with all the Jack Reacher stuff. I go back to the one line in Jack Reacher where the investigator goes back to a motel and shows a picture of a woman. And he says, is there a guy staying here who looks like he could kill this woman in one punch? And they're like, Tom Cruise. And I'm like, no, Tom Cruise doesn't look like he can kill anyone with one punch. Dwayne The Rock Johnson looks like he could kill about five people with one punch. So apparently that's what Jack Reacher's much more like, a big, massive Dwayne Johnson type character. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first movie I want to hit on the trailer park is Detroit, which is directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Of course, she won an Oscar for The Hurt Locker, but she's always been a high testosterone director. And this movie looks like it's going to be no different. So that's Detroit, which takes place in 1967 during the Detroit riots and sniper activity, where there was a lot of racial tension between police and the black community. And, well, here it is. This is the trailer.
It's a war zone out there. They're destroying the city.
When you're black, it's almost like having a gun pointed at your face. It's like,
hit the door!
You shoot it.
Oh, man.
It's just a pistol. It just starts racing.
Army taking fire.
Trash fire. Near the Algiers Motel.
Hey, y'all, there's a bunch of police outside right now.
I'm curious to see this. I did not live through this. I was born just several years after this movie takes place. So I don't know what the actual political climate was. I did not live through it. And I'm not from Detroit. I'm close to Detroit. I'm about 3 hours away. But, you know, Detroit, there's a lot of Ohio to go through before you get to Detroit. And this looks interesting and it looks very relevant considering there's a lot of racial tensions in the country right now. And there's a lot of gun tensions in the country right now. So it looks like we're dealing with a lot of the same concepts are all spilling out right now. And so it's at least relevant to some of the issues that are happening of the day. And so this looks like it's a good movie. She does a very much a visceral fly on the wall, kind of boots on the ground kind of movie. And that's what she did with Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. It'll be nice to see this outside of the military context. The next one I want to talk about is Thor Ragnarok, which actually has the distinction now of being the most downloaded trailer, I think either the Marvel Cinematic Universe or Disney in general. It opens on November 3rd. Here's the trailer.
It's main event time.
We know each other. He's a friend from work.
Oh, come on.
They're updating the Thor movies that they're almost unrecognizable from the first film. The first film was very pop bubblegum, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe was still trying to figure out its look and feel. And this one, I've heard people say it feels a bit like Guardians of the Galaxy, and certainly it does. But it feels like it has more in relation to Thor the Dark World, which I liked. A lot of people malign that movie, and I actually enjoyed Thor the Dark World quite a bit. I actually liked it better than the first one. So this one looks like it feels, it has that same feel and sort of that fantastical element. You've got Jeff Goldblum in a very Guardian of the Galaxy looking outfit and makeup. So yeah, just a big smackdown between Thor and a Hulk, which is always fun in the movies, and it looks like it's going to have a little more relevance to the plot than just an excuse to have them fight. So yeah, looking forward to that one in November. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Gifted and Spark a Space Tale. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first film I want to review is Gifted. Actually opened midweek this week, so it's actually been out for a couple days. And that stars Chris Evans. He plays a man who is raising a math prodigy and gets caught up in a custody battle with her grandmother when he wants to let the girl just have a regular childhood.
I listen to the wind of my soul.
I think your niece may be gifted.
I am good friends with the headmaster of the Oaks Academy for Gifted Education.
No, I promised my sister I'd give Mary a normal life.
We petition the court to grant my client full custody of the child.
You're going to take that girl, you're going to loan her out to some think tank where she can talk non-trivial zeros with a bunch of old Russian guys for the rest of her life.
And you'd bury her under a rock.
Evelyn, stop. I'm raising her how I believe Diane would have wanted.
The best thing I can say about this movie is its heart's in the right place. It's directed by Mark Webb, who did 500 Days of Summer, which they're pushing as the associated film, you know, from the director of 500 Days of Summer, because that was a smaller, more independent movie. He also directed the Amazing Spider-Man movies, which they're not trying to tie to this because those all, A, weren't huge successes, and B, is a totally different wheelhouse than this film. This is a much more smaller, intimate movie, and it's Chris Evans. I remember hearing this a couple years ago. Chris Evans kind of wanted to be done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I get it. I mean, he did three Captain America movies. He's done two Avengers movies. He's had cameos in several other ones. And, you know, so at a certain point, you're, you know, he's been doing this for going on 10 years now, and he may want to do something different. And I get that. So we'll see what happens. And they're going to go through casting changes in the Marvel Universe anyways, because you've got Robert Downey Jr. sort of figuring out what he wants to do now that he has sort of resurrected his career over the last decade. But this is him trying to do more smaller, intimate, meaningful movies. And I can never get on a actor's case if they want to do something meaningful, especially if, you know, they've made their money and they made their fame and, you know, they're not a trained monkey. They don't have to dance for us all the time. So I think this is him lending his name to it and getting some high profile. You also have Octavia Spencer in it, who, of course, has had quite a bit of a career. She's come a long way from being the prostitute in Bad Santa, where, you know, she won an Academy Award for The Help. And of course, she was in Hidden Figures. So it's got a good cast in there. And Jenny Slate is in there. She plays the teacher of this little girl. So its heart's very much in the right place. Chris Evans, he plays the girl's uncle, because the girl's mother has passed away and, you know, without paperwork, given her daughter to him. It's them trying to say, hey, kids that have extraordinary abilities should be able to also just be kids sometimes. And I fully believe that. I think that one of the biggest problems in our country right now is kids are getting overscheduled. Kids are getting overscheduled and overpressured. They've got music lessons and sports practice and taekwondo lessons and this, that, and the other. And they're going from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. And the kid doesn't have a chance to just goof off. The kid doesn't have a chance to just sit there and watch TV. And there's nothing wrong with that. Kids need to decompress. I remember when I was a kid, you know, Saturday mornings were sacred. You woke up at 6, started watching cartoons until noon, and that was your time. And then you'd go out and you'd play with your friends because it was still light out. Nowadays, every kid's seem to be overscheduled and has too much stuff going on, and the kids just want to have a chance to be a kid. Kids want to be creative and goofy and not be locked down to schedule. So I very much believe in the let a kid be a kid. However, you know, in this movie, the little girl, she's a math genius. I mean, she's learning differential equations when she's in, you know, like second or third grade. And my wife's a first grade teacher. And my wife would be the first to tell you that during her math lessons, she does not want a student in that math lesson who knows advanced calculus. Because if you're trying to teach the rest of the class 2 + 2 = 4, you don't need somebody who's so far advanced the kid's going to get bored and be a problem. And so there are appropriate tracks for kids to take. In most classrooms, especially most, you know, major cities and even rural areas and their state funding and that sort of thing that allows kids that can be identified as gifted to have help and have a progressive study. Now, in this thing, the kid's so far advanced, there needs to be something there because the kid's just going to be disruptive in the classroom. It's not good for the kid because the kid's going to be bored. And it's not good for the teacher because the teacher's going to be wrangling one kid. And it's not good for the other kids in the class because it's going to be demeaning to their self-esteem because here's somebody who's so much better at them for through no fault of her own. She's gifted. And it doesn't help them learn what they need to learn at the normal pace. So in a situation like this, there needs to be some advanced placement for a kid like this, at least in math. Maybe in literature, she's not so good. And then you've got the grandmother coming in, and she wants to adopt the kid, and she wants custody so she can put her into these high education. I'm like, there's got to be a middle ground. There's got to be a middle ground where the kid can go to school, or you can move out of your trailer trash community to a district that actually has that kind of a school, or maybe work a busing situation to take that kid to a normal school, but can get that individualized attention that's needed. The movie does not exist with any sort of compromise. It's either she stays in a regular classroom or she goes to Russian tutors with her grandmother. And that's part of the problem. It's also very unrealistic with how they run the family court. And, you know, some of the shenanigans that are pulled, that it feels very much like it's written and not actually researched for how family court works. Ultimately, the heart's in the right place, but this guy's not providing her with any great life either compared to what the grandmother, if she were to take her off and lock her away with Russian tutors, as he talks about. So, you know, just because he's Captain America and he looks good and he spends all his nights in a bar drinking doesn't mean that he's also making the best decisions for the girl. That was my frustration with the movie. I mean, the little girl is very adorable and she's a great little actress, but they're wrestling with a situation that has, it's just this huge wide path of compromise in the middle that nobody is even going to step foot in. And that's part of the frustration of watching this film. So I'm going to have to say that Gifted for me kind of sucked.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Just really going to quickly drive by Spark, A Space Tale, because this was not screened for anybody. When an interplanetary warlord destroys his planet, a young space monkey, yes, you heard me right, a young space monkey discovers he's part of the royal family destined to return to power.
Spark? I thought he was dead!
No matter.
It's time to take out the trash.
What exactly are you planning?
Just killing the prince, destroying another planet, and having the universe bow before me in fear!
We need to start on a plan to take on Zong.
We're outnumbered, outgunned.
People of Banna, Zong laid waste to our planet, but together, we're taking it back!
Can we go to the bathroom first?
Yes!
I get a real Ratchet and Clank feel from this movie. This one looks even cheap for that level. Ratchet and Clank actually looked good. It just was goofy and silly and basically for a 5-year-old or younger. This looks like something that you would have gotten on basic cable, like direct to basic cable. It does not look like it's very well done. I'm not expecting Pixar level quality from anybody aside from Pixar. But this one doesn't even have like Pixar level quality from 1995. And it just doesn't look very good. And I don't know, not much more I can say about it. It looks rudimentary and like it would be more of a Netflix original movie that the kids would watch. I mean, my kid watches Skylanders Academy and that looks like it's got better graphics than this movie does and probably a better story. So it gets a preemptive suck because they didn't show it to anybody.
It sucks.
And that is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the fate of the Furious and Tommy's honor. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse, Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. Let's rev up the engines and talk about the fate of the Furious. Dominic Toretto goes rogue to partner with an international cyber terrorist, and his team must come together to help bring him down.
All right, team, listen up. The game has changed now. Dominic Toretto just went rogue.
I know it looks bad. Don't give up on him so easy.
You've only got one chance to make this family whole again.
Don't do this, Dom.
You ready?
One thing I can guarantee, no one's ready for this.
She's the very definition of high-tech terrorism.
First of all, before even talk about this movie, can we reflect on what's happened with this series? It is rare for a movie series to start off with like just one or two movies that are okay and then become really good after four or five. In my opinion, these movies didn't hit full stride until Fast Five. Now, I know there's a lot of people who think Tokyo Drift's a great movie. I disagree. I think it's garbage. There's a lot of people who like Too Fast, Too Furious. I disagree. I think that's also complete garbage. I thought the first movie was entertaining for what it was, but they were like boosting VCRs and souping up crappy cars to make them really cool. An authentic street racing movie, which is what people really do. They take stuff like Chevy Novas, which were a notoriously terrible car, and they soup it up and they add on to it and they make these street racer hot rods. It's gone off completely off the deep end now. They've got Lamborghinis driving on ice shelves and tanks. But it wasn't until the fifth movie that I really felt that the movies kind of hit a stride of what they were meant to be, which are these multicultural James Bond race car action movies. They're going after EMPs and nuclear weapons and fighting submarines and airplanes. They're probably going to go to space next. It is rare that you can accurately describe a movie with the name of somebody who's in the movie, but these films are ludicrous, but they're fun. And I also feel like, even though I thought Fast Five was pretty good, they still spent a little bit too much time with some kind of really goofy character moments, and the movies ran a little too long. But it was the last couple of these movies, they've kind of streamlined them because there's only so much characterization you can really do with these people. This is an eighth movie. And yeah, some of them haven't been in every single one. Letty disappeared for a while. The Rock is only in the last three or four, but there's only so much more depth you can give to Dominic Toretto. He doesn't have much depth to begin with, but, his character's fleshed out. Now, there's not the emotional connection that you had with Furious 7, where that was, of course, Paul Walker's final movie. He had died during the production of it. And so there wasn't that farewell, which is very poignant in Furious 7, which I actually enjoyed. I thought that was actually pretty good. This one, they have a couple nods to him, but they don't dwell on it, which I think is good. You don't want these movies to dwell on the loss of this character, but they do give a nod to him and they do respect him. Now, all these movies have turned into essentially cartoons, and I described it on Twitter. I said these things can be described like this: international action scene, booty, fast car, family, explosions, physics. We don't need no stinking physics. Barbecue dinner. That is how these films run, and they're all the same, and they're ridiculous, and they're over the top, and they don't just ignore the way science works. They just make up their own science. Dominic Toretto somehow can control gravity and momentum and fire, and also somehow has a psychic connection with his family/team, and even like The Rock, who basically plays the Thing from Fantastic Four, where he's super strong. He punches through walls. He rips concrete benches out of the wall with very little effort. It's silly because they still try to ground themselves into reality. They never have like a unicorn come in and attack people because they'd be like, well, that's ridiculous. It's sort of like Scooby-Doo. The Fred is out there saying, well, you know, ghosts aren't real and demons aren't real. And oh, of course, it has to be Old Man Smithers trying to scare people away. You go, you have a talking dog. That's how that universe works. And that's kind of how the Fast and Furious universe works. Now, with that said, it's a stupid plot, but it's fun to watch. And it's one of these movies, and they're trying to do it with the Triple X movies, even though they're not as popular in America. Those do really well overseas. That's what they're trying to do with these movies, is bring everybody together. I mean, everybody's on this team. They have a team that went from just like Paul Walker and Vin Diesel to this Mission Impossible rogues gallery of like 15 characters that they keep killing off, but more keep coming in. And it's fun to watch. It's disposable Big Mac entertainment, but it's completely ridiculous. And Charlize Theron is fine as a bad guy. She's a decent villain. She's not the greatest villain ever, but yeah, I mean, I had fun watching it. I probably had more fun watching this than, like, you know, some of the other Fast and Furious films. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Tommy's Honor, spelled H-O-N-O-U-R, which tells you it's a British movie. Well, not a British movie. It's a Scottish movie. This biopic follows Tommy Morris, a Scotsman who faced family and societal struggles to bring the game of golf to the mainstream.
So, gentlemen pay you to play golf?
Hundreds of pounds, like.
What will you play for now, Tommy?
Money, glory, love.
I'm 28 years old. Best find yourself a schoolgirl.
You're a hero to this town, but a gentleman you'll never be.
I don't want to spend my days teeing up gentlemen who think they're better than me. Can you not see that?
What do you think you'll be doing?
Making my own way!
I don't know how many people know this, but golf is, it was invented in Scotland. There's actually a Looney Tunes cartoon about this. That's where I get my history, by the way. But Tommy's Honor takes place in the latter part of the 19th century, where it was still just kind of a Scottish game, and the rules were being developed, and it had people playing it, but it was kind of like only the gentlemen played, and the poor people were caddies, pretty much like what happens today. You know, the rich people play golf and the poor people caddy. But in this movie, it's Tommy and his father designs golf courses and works on golfing equipment. And his son was a prodigy in terms of golfing, and he was a great golfer and like won the main tournament in Scotland like 3 times in a row, which was unheard of back then. But of course, he was a peasant worker, essentially, and the gentlemen of Scotland weren't too keen on him taking over the game. But it covers a lot of the same ground you see, where it's like, you're at a lower standing of society, so you shouldn't be good enough at this, and your position in life was determined before you were born. So you've got that whole archetype working there. You've got the fact that he's falling in love with a girl played by Ophelia Lovibond, who I've always kind of had a thing for her. I'm wondering if they ever made a movie with Benedict Cumberbatch and Ophelia Lovibond, it would be the most British movie ever made in the history of this planet, just because of the names alone. But it's him falling in love with this woman, and she's a servant, and the mother doesn't approve because she's a little bit older. She's 29, how scandalous, when he's like 23. And she has a little secret in her past. And so you've got the disapproving mom of who he wants to marry, and you've got him wanting to rise above his standing that his father, not just become the same thing his father was and being a lackey to these rich people. So you've got a lot of these archetypes showing up that show up in a lot of these movies, because they're universal archetypes. They're universal stories of anybody trying to better themselves and become greater than what their said standing should be. And overall, it's a well-acted movie, and I mean, it's charming, and it's less about golf, really, which is good, because I saw when I was going to watch it, I'm like, oh god, a golf movie. But you know, it's not really as much about golf, but about this guy's journey. And it's gorgeously shot, because of course it's in Scotland and it looks beautiful. It also, I wish that golf was a little more rowdy nowadays, like it was in this. The golf scenes are actually kind of funny, because, you know, you got these blue collar Scotsmen and they're rushing the field and stuff like that. I'd love to see that happen. Like, I live in Columbus, Ohio. We have the Memorial Tournament every year at Jack Nicklaus's Muirfield Village. I would love to see that devolve into what happens in this movie. So ultimately, Tommy's Honor, it's made for golf fans, but it's still a decent movie, so I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I got to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return, the weekly box office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Sing.
Stop it now.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the final movie review. This takes me back. I was in college in the early 1990s, and my sister and I, we went to the same college in Bowling Green, Ohio, and we came back home to Columbus for Thanksgiving. And it was after the football games, and we were at my uncle's, and we started flipping through cable. We didn't have cable at our house, but my uncle had cable. And we swerved into this show where these guys were in a little silhouette on the bottom of the screen making fun of an old cheesy science fiction movie. The movie was called Pod People, and the show was called Mystery Science Theater 3000. And it was in its infancy. It was still very, very young. This would have been 1990? So the show had been on for only a couple years on Comedy Central. And at the time, I think it was called the Comedy Channel. It wasn't even Comedy Central at the time. And we immediately fell in love with the show. We thought it was the most hilarious thing in the world because my sister and I would used to, when we were in high school, we'd watch movies and make fun of them, you know, if they're really cheesy and stupid. And here were people doing it on TV and they were hilarious. We immediately got it. And there's a scene in Pretty Woman where Richard Gere's character explains to Julia Roberts' character about the opera. He says, there are people who don't understand opera, and then there are people who witness it for the first time, and it enters them, and it becomes part of them, and they will always carry it with them. And the people who don't get it can learn to appreciate opera, but they'll never fully have a relationship with it like the other people. And that's the way it was with us. I'm equating Mystery Science Theater to opera, but that's the thing. My sister and I, we turned it on within seconds. We were hooked on this show and we started videotaping them and watching them. We convinced our parents to get cable just so we could watch this show. And it was one of my favorite shows ever made. And over the years, you know, it had some twists and turns and they had changed hosts and then they moved to the Sci-Fi Channel. And then it finally dwindled away in 1999 and went the way of the dodo. And years later, they got resurrected in different versions like Cinematic Titanic and Riff Tracks, which is well known. And there have been riffs and fights and stuff like that and behind the scenes drama, but they've all kind of come together. And Joel Hodgson's put together a Kickstarter campaign and they relaunched it. And here it is on Netflix. For the first time this century, we have new Mystery Science Theater episodes available. They're on Netflix. The first season is all available. I got a chance to get some previews of this, and I have to say it is authentically back.
Oh, hey, we've got one!
Mayday, mayday, mayday. This is
Moon Base 13. We need your help.
Show prep initiated.
Heck? You speak to I, Kinga Forrester, commander of the Moon 13 Research Station. I am reopening my family's most legendary experiment, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Movie in the hole!
You are not my real father, mister.
Mystery Science Theater feels like it's an old Mystery Science Theater, but with a modern edge, but not too modern of an edge. I mean, like for example, the special effects are all still cheesy and miniature, very obvious miniature, and looks like maybe some stop motion stuff. And they've updated it, and it's widescreen, and they've got new characters and new hosts, but it still feels like that gizmocratic look and feel to the theater. And where they're on Moon Base 13 instead of Deep 13. So the new cast nails it. And in fact, Felicia Day, I'm not a huge fan of Felicia Day. I've seen her in other TV shows and stuff, but she knocks it out of the park in this. She is so committed, so ludicrously committed to this series. And she shows up Patton Oswalt, who's playing TV Frank's son. And I mean, he's good too, but I mean, for as the Mad, Felicia Day, I am on that Felicia Day bandwagon. Jonah Ray, who plays the new guy and the new guy in the theater, he's good. He's got some great wit and he's got some great delivery. He maybe shouldn't rap as much. He should probably shave at some point because he kind of looks more like a fan than a host sometimes. But he's very good comedically. And the people doing the voices of Crow and Tom Servo is a little tough to get used to because Kevin Murphy had such nuance and so defined that character. Kevin Murphy made that character Tom Servo, and he's less of a caricature. Like, Crow's a caricature. You can do that as a voice. But Tom Servo is a little more difficult. So I've just got to get used to the new Tom Servo. They've got some great cameos in there, but I'm not going to spoil any of them. You got to watch it. The whole season's on Netflix right now, so check it out. And the first film was Reptilicus, which is, you can know from the, if you watch the trailer, it actually has a poster for Reptilicus. And I've seen that movie before. It's a great start. Cheesy 1950s monster film from Denmark that also serves as a travelogue. It's an amazing movie, and they do a great job. I have some hilarious singers. The second one, I watched the first two. Cry Wilderness is a second movie with this. It's just this terrible family-ish 80s film about Bigfoot who doesn't have his human hands for some reason. And again, it totally works because it is, these movies are the very essence of Mystery Science Theater. So overall, it's updated and it has a new look, but it is authentically back. And I am one happy camper. The worst thing about this is I will be done with these, watching all of them in the next week or two, so that I'm going to have to wait for the next season. I can't wait. I hope this goes on forever. So I'm going to say the new Mystery Science Theater 3000 totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quickly about the box office. Last week, Boss Baby won for the second week in a row, which was a completely expected thing, and they're doing a great job. I like Boss Baby. Smurfs did 13 million, and Going in Style did 12, and that's about it. I mean, they were not big juggernauts. And they're also going to be creamed this weekend, because this weekend, I think Fast and Furious, you know, that some people don't know exactly what it's going to make. I'm saying 125 million. I don't think it's going to top the almost 150 million that Furious 7 made, because there was that tribute to Paul Walker that you're going to miss in there. So it's not going to top that. But I still think it's good for 125 million. This is going to be a year of blockbusters. I can already feel it. And I'm actually enjoying 2017's movies a little bit more than I probably did 2016's at this time last year. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Even though it came out a couple weeks ago, I want to talk a little bit about Sing. I've got the Blu-ray here. Had a chance to watch it with the family. Let's go ahead and play a trailer. Essentially, it's Zootopia Idol. Zootopia Idol, I think we can say. Here we go.
If you want to become stars and win $100,000, then you better be ready to work harder than you've ever worked in your lives.
Where were you?
I was at a rehearsal.
Dad, I don't want to be in your gang. I want to be a singer.
How did I end up with a son like you?
Music can alter moves and talk to you.
I can sing, but I get so scared.
Come on, be confident. Don't you want this?
Don't let fear stop you from doing the thing you love.
I saw this in the theater very early because they needed it for award consideration. So, I saw it like a month before it came out. And then it came out at Christmas. And its biggest struggle that it had, both in award season and even the box, it did well. But in terms of remembering it, is 2016 was a fantastic year for animation. You had Cell Animation with some foreign stuff. You had movies like Kubo and the Two Strings, stop motion, which was brilliant. You had Finding Dory, which was huge. And you had Moana, which was gorgeous. And Zootopia, which was fantastic. And then you even had like the Jungle Book. You can count the Jungle Book too, because that was essentially animation. So this was a big year for animation. And Sing was a pretty good movie, but there were so many fantastic animated movies, this didn't rise above it. But it's still a charming little film. Now, it spreads out its story. It's no one's movie. It's not even the Koala Bears who's running this theater. It's more or less an ensemble piece, and in a lot of ways, an excuse to just sort of tie some stuff together. But it works, and it's charming, and it's directed by Garth Jennings. He did like Hitchhiker's Guide. He's a bit of a comedian himself. And you have to approach it as not trying to be as groundbreaking as Zootopia or as beautiful as Moana. You just have to look at it as saying, hey, this is a chance to just get some really great musical numbers by some cute animals. And it works as a family movie night. We watched it. I enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it more without the pressure of having award season around it, just being able to watch it as a throwaway film. Now, the Blu-ray has some neat stuff on it. The biggest thing, which Universal always does, is they throw in mini-movies, which are short films that deal with the characters from the film and just sort of like these additional adventures, and those are always cute. They do those with the Minion movies. And there's a couple music videos. There's a collection moment of the best of Gunther, who's my favorite character. He's the pig who has the German accent, played by Nick Kroll from The League. Sing's a totally fun little movie, and it's the movie you can actually kind of play in the background and you don't have to follow plot-wise because it's essentially just animals singing. So I'm going to have to say that Sing as a movie and as a Blu-ray kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
The other ones that hit real quickly, you got Hidden Figures, which was, of course, a big movie. It just had a blip of a run for 2016, but it's a big movie in 2017. And Monster Trucks, which came and went nobody cared about. That is it for this week. I need to go. And when I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Born in China and Free Fire. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.